Welcome back, beloved listeners, to another episode of Wings Over Water, Creativity and Recovery on City of Angels Recovery Radio. I am your hostess with the mostest, Kathy Moser. I'm really glad to have you here today as we do this ongoing experiment. This, how does our recovery affect our creativity, and how does our creativity affect our recovery? I'm really excited today to have a poet from Boston, Matt. Matt, can you tell me how to say your last name correctly?
The last name is Ganham.
Matt Ganham. He is a poet and also an advocate and a cheerleader for recovery using the power of the spoken word. He's passionate about the power of recovery and also passionate about the power of poetry to tell the truth and get the word out there. So, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
No problem at all. I'm truly honored to be on and excited.
Yay.
Get the message out. And I mean, one of the main things that I promote to everybody when talking recovery is the writing process, because I know, you know, it's my biggest therapeutic tool, and it's how I never forget how I keep things up front. And I know when I'm not writing, my whole entire mood changes. So I definitely push it on a lot of people that I speak with, that they should, you know, get involved with writing, just something from the heart. It doesn't have to necessarily be poetry. That's just, you know, what I like to do.
So what's your experience with that process in terms of, like, I just wonder, like, were you creative before you hit recovery? Did that shift for you at all?
I mean, when I was younger, I've always liked the way to, like, play around with words, and I hated English class, but the one thing I loved was, like, the poetry and writing poems ever since, like, middle school. But obviously, when I was using, I didn't do any of that. I mean, the only thing I focused on when I was getting high was, you know, getting high. And, I mean, when I got clean, you know, I was in a house with 27 men. And as a man, you're taught, bury your feelings, be a man about it, don't show emotion, all this stuff. But you know, when you get into recovery, you know, you're dealing with all these emotions. I ran from everything for years. That's why I got high, to be numb, to not feel the depression, not feel the love, not feel the hate, try to escape from those feelings. I had, like, this hole in my chest I used to fill with all this bad stuff, you know, with heroin, with coke, with crack, with everything I was using. So in recovery, you have to deal with a lot of shame And the consequences of your action and what you put your family through. And one of my releases, because I didn't feel comfortable turning to my fellow man next to me and talk about how I was feeling, because I didn't want him using it against me, because I didn't know him. I went through a halfway house in Dorchester in Boston, and, you know, you try to bury your feelings. And so in this halfway house, I started writing again. And it's like, you know, a waterfall of emotions which is coming out, because when you don't write for so long and you get, like, you know, you write in the moment, and it was like, you know, it was just a really good feeling after writing a piece. And then also, I can tell you a story. I was probably in my third week in the halfway house, I had court. And so I go to court, and I was still on restriction, which means you can't really do anything. You have to do your chores. You can go to a meeting at night, but you can't be out for job search or for anything. So I would stay out a little extra from court instead of going back to the house, and I ended up meeting up with a kid in downtown Boston from the house, and he was with this girl, and he pulled out a syringe. She pulled out a syringe that was filled. And I wanted it so bad at the time that I would have drop-kicked her and took it if I didn't turn around and run away and ran back to the house. And I ended up writing a poem about overdosing. Because I knew if I took that needle right there and I got high right then, like, I was at the end of my run, I was on a death wish that I didn't want to wake up. I didn't have the courage to kill myself, but the only way out of the chaos at the time that I thought was just fading peacefully in my sleep. And that's how bad I wanted it. And I remember turning and running. I ran to the train station, and I got back to the house, and I just sat in my room, and I buried myself in the notebook, and I wrote the steps of how I copped, what bathroom I would go to, and in the end, I was blue cold with gray lips. And that's kind of keeping things on the forefront, that I knew if I had taken that and used it or gave in to temptation at that time, like, X, Y, and Z would happen. And when you put it into a poem, And even, you know, not necessarily that day, but it's a passing feeling. For me, those temptations, it's how you overcome it. It's a little obstacle in your way. And when you overcome it, like a few days later, I look back and, you know, you know that poem really sunk in. And it really hit home that, you know, this is the outcome of how I get high. I go, you know, 1,000. There's no moderation. 0 to 1,000. So.
Right. Well, I think that's like you, the way you're talking about that, it kind of makes me think that your creativity in that way is like really serving your recovery because you
Absolutely.
Have this tangible piece of work. I mean, sometimes if we just have a feeling, right? Like,
yes.
Oh, I think like, oh, if I cop, then I might relapse, whatever.
Yes.
But when you have the poem and you have it there and then it becomes a work of art that you care about, it's kind of more like a concrete signpost.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, one of the suggestions I give to other people is even keeping a journal. Because one thing that I enjoy doing is like going back 5 years and reading the poems I was writing then compared to what I'm writing now. And you see the progression and you see where your mind is. And even like, you know, I recently moved. So I have, in the process of moving, I have all these notebooks that I haven't looked at in a long time. And I tell you, I sat there and just read, you know, I read the book that overdose poem was in and the, you know, the poems that I wrote in the halfway house compared to where I'm at in my recovery and where I'm at in life today. And it's just like, you know, It really helps you to not forget to be proud of yourself, too, of how far you've come, you know?
Right, that's another good point. I mean, it's easy to lose track, like, on a bad day of, like,
Definitely. Of
progress that you've made. So listen, man, we'd love to hear a poem if you got something you'd like to drop right here.
Definitely. Impatiently waiting until the smoke clears. Tightrope walking between insanity and serenity. I wonder if I can ever find hope here before the rope tears and the last thread of my misery. I can't escape the fall. The hands of fate grab hold of me, choking me, exposing the broken me of what I was supposed to be. A wrong turn at the fork in the road. Now I can't turn back. Will the door of opportunity close or should I make my own path? I knew I shouldn't have sold that. A trip away from this foolish paradise to a place where angels with clipped wings make guitar strings sing into the afterlife. For my soul, the devil wants to know what's the asking price. My fall from grace was quicker than slipping on black ice. Still searching for solid ground, spiraling and falling down. Is this really my calling now? Does it still make my heart pound? Standing on stage, staring out at the crowd. But it's nothing but empty seats. Do I do it for them or do I do it for me? Do I do it for inner peace or do I do it to be free? Just breathe. Because I want to take your breath away. Well, I welcome you all to my palace of shame and introduce you all to my marriage to pain. Carrying the shadow that I battled the change and the war was ugly. I rose from the ashes of a junkie. Used to load up in the bathrooms of donkeys. Now I'm getting high off the crowd that's in front of me. Like the applause was a fix, only fit for a druggie. So I take a hit off the people screaming they love me. That one shining moment, these dark skies become sunny. I forget about the nights I was alone, roaming the streets with no place to go, no place to call home, raising a broken child on my own, and you wonder why I got stoned. Chemicals numbing my sharp senses. How many nights was it park benches? A story to tie wrenching when I start venting. The ghost of my past coming back for vengeance. Syringes saying, use me and you won't end up back behind barbed wire fences, but I'm against this. So I pull a piece of paper out and I let my pen bleed. For you to remember me, even if my physical presence is deceased, the essence of my being will never leave. Inside these words, please cherish me, for my soul to be set free is more than just a memory.
Oh my Lord, that is beautiful. Do you title your poems, Matt?
I do that. Not all the time, but that one's called More Than a Memory. And basically what that is written about is, you know, addiction. I still have addictive behaviors, but it's used in a positive way. Like, the writing is addictive. Like, I perform a lot in the city of Boston. I've performed at the New Eureka Cafe in New York, down in Orlando, in Baltimore. I go to different colleges and high schools, and it's like trying to transfer a positive message from, like, a negative experience. And it all relates to, like, the writing, and the writing is the metaphor, like, the addiction back and forth.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a tricky thing about what is it that we're passionate about
Exactly. And
dedicated to. I heard the lines in there about that, you know, being high on the audience. And
Yeah.
I think for artists who are transitioning, who maybe were using, you know, and now are wanting to be able to pursue their art form in recovery, performing can be really, really tricky.
Oh, it can be, because there's lows with it, too. You can,
right.
You know,
can you talk about some of that? Like, have you learned any tools for taking care of yourself through the highs and the lows?
Oh, definitely. Well, I mean, you know, it comes down to I don't want to affect anybody, because there's times that I'll perform in front of 2,000 people, and you get, like, an audience that roars, and they all applaud, and then you get another time where we'll do an event, and there'll be 5 people in the crowd. And it's like you chase the larger crowds, and then you got to realize that, you know, as long as you affect one person, you know, you can't really ride off, you know, you can't just focus on the applause and the limelight and putting your stuff out there. And even in that piece, like, the description in it, I talk about being in front of no crowd and just performing, because I'm doing it for me. Like,
right,
I do it to
relieve. For them? What's that line? Do I do it for them, or do I do it for me? Do I do it for something, or do I do it to be free?
Yeah, because, you know, in recovery for me, putting the poetry out, there's a lot of people that relate to the way that I write, and there's a lot of people that, like, follow my work, and they get inspired by, you know, some of the work that I do. And I, you know, it came down to the fact that I don't do it to them. Like, I'm not forcing it to appease people, and I write for myself, and I write for what makes me feel good. And sometimes, like, when I was doing slam poetry and trying to compete in competitions, and I write from the heart, whereas when sometimes people that were performing in competitions, they would write for a score. And
right.
I started to change a little bit, and I was getting frustrated and really down on myself about it, because I changed my style trying to write for the audience and write for, you know, for other people, and realized that, you know, I just need to do it for me, and I'm going to be happy with it no matter what the outcome is, no matter who likes it. As long as I like and enjoy what I'm writing and it feels good to me, then all the other stuff doesn't matter. And it just, you know, fortunately, it inspires other people.
Right. Well, that's like, I mean, that's like kind of reminds me of the slogan that some people use in recovery of "To thine own self be true," because
yeah.
Part of the power of art is authenticity.
Definitely.
You're,
it's tricky, though. I got a bunch of friends who are hip-hop artists that are in recovery, or sometimes they're going back and forth where they end up relapsing, and it's an extremely hard balance to find. Trying to
right.
get, you know, trying to, you know, because you can get high off the audience, you can get high off your you know, your brand growing, your name growing and stuff like that, and then, you know, whether you plateau, you hit a peak and you start not getting the same notoriety as you climax, you know, that can be very discouraging for some people. So it's something
right.
you got to take care of yourself first and always keep things on the forefront of what you're doing.
One of my other thoughts I wanted to ask you about, I know you do a lot of stuff with Wicked Sober, and
yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, because you're, like, definitely reaching out your hand to other people to help them know that recovery exists.
Oh, definitely. So, basically, I remember calling detoxes around Boston and not getting any answers. And what detoxes around here do is they tell you, oh, we have no beds, and they hang up on you. Call tomorrow.
Mm.
And that's very discouraging. So you know what I would do is I would go get high, sleep all day, call it later in the afternoon tonight, and there wouldn't be any beds the next day. And soon enough, you end up giving up trying to get into detox. And what we try to, you know, what Wicked Sober was based out of is that, you know, it's difficult getting in detox when you're mentally obsessed, physically dependent on a drug, to even try to get into detox on your own. We run a support service. In Massachusetts, we work with out-of-state programs. Across the country, we have different connections in different cities and states. And we offer just a support service. We'll make some phone calls. We'll call different programs. You know, we set up a treatment plan and put it in place for families. A lot of times we deal with families that will call us up and say, you know, my son is struggling with heroin. My daughter has alcoholism. Like, where do I go? Because who researches detoxes and recovery programs in their spare time until they hit in a crisis? And when
right.
you're in a crisis situation, now it's like you call, you know, you call the police station or you go to the emergency room, they give you a list of numbers that you have no idea who to call, what place to go. And certain times it's where you start in the process that helps you with the best option for long-term recovery. Instead of going to like a 3 to 5 day detox, trying to get into a 30-day program, or in Massachusetts there's holdings and like extended detox programs to get into like a halfway house. And we help people maneuver the system, and we make the phone calls with them, and we've developed relationships in Massachusetts, and we definitely work with people that are out of state and try to offer as much help as possible. And I mean, if for any of the services that we offer, you can go to wickedsober.com, or our support line is 1-855-698-5056. The number again is 1-855-698-5056. And one of the things that I love about what we do is we're on the front lines. We protest for Zohydro. We testify at the State House to get extended lengths of stay because insurance companies cut you off after 3 to 5 days. So right. We were at the Mass State House. I testified. I read 30 of my friends that passed away, named one name after another, and then turned to the state reps and said, how would you feel like if that was one of your kids that fell through the cracks? And until more and more people speak up and raise their voice on addiction, you know, we're not going to get the proper services. It's a shame-driven disease, so people don't want to speak out. And I put my name out there, I put my story out there to inspire hope and to offer strength for others that they can overcome. You know, I was homeless, broken, in and out of programs, in and out of jail, and, you know, I was a lost cause, and, you know, I refuse to be a lost voice now.
Hey, man, you got another poem you might want to drop right here?
Absolutely. Imagine taking beatings as a little kid, too small to fight back. Hated the place where we live, never could get on the right path. Imagine being secluded from school, barely someone to call a friend. Acting out in class like it was cool, maybe somebody would notice me then. Imagine every day wanting to run away, sprinting from this thing called life. Depression can hurt in the worst way, falling asleep just to dream about paradise. Imagine watching your home split in half, trying to hide it from your little sister. My attitude changed after that. I was growing the heart of a sinner. Imagine being thrown out the house when you just turned 16, forced to figure out how to survive by any means. Imagine every day stealing hot pockets just to eat, sleeping on dirty sofas, wearing the same clothes for weeks, and that's before the drugs took over. Imagine seeing your friends end up dead, kneeling beside so many caskets, snipping Oxycontin to the head with cash and prescription packs stashed in my mattress. Imagine white powder stained to your living room table, next to a strain you used to shave down pills. Pictures of people that transformed into angels, framed sitting on my windowsill. Imagine holding death in your arms, a frozen, cold, soulless body. Lifeless eyes staring at you and your boy's mom. Now suicidal thoughts continue to haunt me. Imagine the OC task force kicking your door, guns raised, pointed at your face, tossing everything on the floor, searching for contraband that was hidden in the safe. Imagine getting stabbed in the shoulder with a hunting knife by some fat guy that sold coke. Then he takes a swipe across your windpipes. It was so close it almost split open my throat. Imagine spiraling out of control while handling murderous weapons. The devil took over my soul as more of my friends made their way to heaven. Imagine mass armed robberies to supply a screaming drug habit. Overdosing is always a possibility when a needle makes love to an addict. Imagine losing your name. Cross it out and write junkie. Injection spots cover your veins, doing whatever it takes to make some money. Imagine hitting rock bottom, dope sick, while everyone around you gets high. Nodding off in South Boston, shooting up to commit suicide. Imagine wearing every article of clothing you own, scheming on a way to make a fast buck. Sobriety was fear of the unknown, but I wasn't trying to press my luck. Imagine sitting in jail expecting to be a father, then have a paternity test reveal that ended up being one of your partners. Imagine turning out worse than before when you're released the streets. Too strung out to stick up stores, but I still had to feed my disease. Imagine syringes and crack pipes, cocaine mixed with dope, the speedball. Can you imagine what that's like? I don't want to describe what happened with my downfall. Imagine the ghost in my rear view, staring back in every reflection. Imagine trying on my pair of shoes and living with my depression. Imagine the cage in my personal prison, locked behind bars with no key. Imagine getting clean from addiction. Imagine you could survive if you traded lives with me.
Wow. So, you know, one of the things I think I'd love to hear you talk about a little bit, because I just don't think we talk about it enough in the culture, is like the power and the gift of rehearsal. You have obviously, like, giving yourself the, I call it in my workshop to say it's the gift of repetition. Like,
yes.
Repetition is not a punishment, it's a gift.
Okay. So first, I want to talk about what got me to, like, be able to you know, kind of own the piece. That's how I always looked at it. Like, when you memorize it, you own it. And after you memorize it, then you can start playing with the different pauses or words you want to hit home with. The first time I ever did an open mic, I had a piece of paper, and a kid came up to me after, and he was like, "Oh, man, you have some very powerful words, but you need to take a piece of paper, you know, or you should never get on the microphone again," which is very disheartening when it's your first time going up to an open mic. But I want to prove the kid wrong, because I kind of thrive off the negativity, and I have that point to prove with certain people. So I came back the next week to this open mic in the Boston area, and I did it without the piece of paper. And, you know, it's definitely, when you memorize and you can kind of tweak how you perform and how you present, a lot of it's repetition. I repeatedly go up to different open mics and different events, and you see what hits home with the crowd response, certain pauses that you need to hit to emphasize a certain word or a certain phrase or a metaphor. And what I enjoy is the fact that I can say a poem like that, and I'm very assertive, and there's a lot of power behind the pieces that I write. And it's a very empowering thing when you can silence an entire room of people and they hang on every single word that you say. And that comes from the practice, and that comes from the confidence behind it. You have to have confidence in the piece that you have. And I wasn't necessarily taught how to perform. I didn't go to school for it. I didn't go to school for writing or anything. And I come from the heart. And when you come from the heart, you're genuine, and, you know, it's just been practice, and it's, you know, seeing how other people perform and certain things that they do that you pick up on, or at least I have. And it's definitely a lot of repetition.
Does that relate to your recovery? Can you see similarities between that and your recovery journey?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, the repetition, the trying different stuff, the following other people, the seeing what works, you're giving yourself a lot of chances.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you gotta, in recovery, there's things that get thrown in your way. And if you fold, I mean, that's when you relapse, is you give up and you quit on yourself and let, you know, certain things happen. I mean, when you start overcoming certain things in recovery, for me at least, I felt like I can overcome anything. I've beaten heroin. I'm completely beaten it. I know I got to work on myself each and every day, but I feel like I've overcome that to the point, like, I'm choked on stage, I've forgotten lines, but I can overcome it because, I mean, you know, if you knew how far I can't even get there to even choke on the words, like, I'm not going to let that stop me from ever doing it again. You know what I mean? Because even in recovery, I failed. Like, I relapsed. I went through programs that didn't work, and I didn't follow advice, and I tried doing things on my own that didn't necessarily work. And that's what happens kind of with performing, is there's times that I failed. But you know what you do is you pick yourself back up and you get right back out there and you try it again. You know, I have dealing with people, you know, there's certain friends of mine that have straight stage fright, but they won't get over it. And it's not necessarily people in recovery, just performers in general. Say you choke on a poem or you forget the words, which happens to everybody. I've seen nationally known poets at events that I've thrown forget their lines of a piece. It happens to everybody. But if you let that, you know, get in your head, you can kind of trip over, you know, not doing it again or thinking, you know, it's something bigger than it is, because it does happen to everybody. I mean, it takes all those screw-ups for me to be able to own the piece.
So you have some YouTube videos up there, right?
I do.
Yeah. Can you tell people how they could find those if they want to see you in action?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can YouTube Mac Anum. And there's a couple of, like, videos that we did a couple of years ago when I first started putting my writing out there. Because for a while, I didn't put it out. I didn't perform. I kind of just kept the notebooks to myself. Maybe in, like, the halfway house and sober house that I went through, I would read to my roommate. But I never really put it out there. And, you know, gradually I had somebody volunteer me for a candlelight vigil to speak at. I read a poem I wrote for a friend I lost, my buddy Steve Pacheco, who we had the same clean time, and, you know, he relapsed and didn't make it. So I read this poem, and I didn't understand the outpour that people had for me. Like, hey, I love that. I related to it so much. Like, where can I find more of your work? So I started putting it out there, and a buddy of mine who, you know, went to film school reached out and said, you want to put a couple videos together of some of your poems? So we did, and I write pretty detailed. I paint a pretty vivid picture, so it's kind of, you know, just showing a visual of what I write about.
Right, awesome. And then you do a radio show as well, right?
We do The Wicked Soul, but Voices of Hope. It's on Tuesday nights. We also play reruns on Thursday. And what we try to do is we try to bring different people on, whether they work in the field, therapists, mothers, addicts. We try to get different perspectives of everybody.
Right. Right. Well, Matt, hey, you got one more poem for us today?
I do. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, man. It's been a total treat.
Definitely. All right, so this is like, the first poem was like the metaphor of the writing addiction that you could say that I have, and the balance of that. Imagine was more of like a step-by-step through some of the experiences I had. And this is like the piece that means the most to me, that I enjoy performing, because it's like, you know, who I am. The piece is called I Am. I'm the surface of a sleepless ocean. The cold depths of frozen emotion. I'm pieces of a heart broken, floating inside a love that was stolen. I'm written poetry spoken. I'm a fresh page with a mind full of things to say. Reminiscing on yesterday's best days to get the stress away, even if I'm depressed today. I'm that feeling inside when you look your lover in the eyes that no other person alive could provide. I'm the sun setting on a crimson sky. I'm trapped inside these speakers, turning naysayers into believers. When the poem gets deeper, I'm the teacher, abusing the fact that I have the platform to reach you. I'm lost in the wind, a breeze that will never come across you again. Brought up in Boston, boxed in the problems of coming up from the bottom where rising is the only option. I'm the beautiful ugly, a recovering junkie, making barely enough money to keep a roof over me and my son that loves me, and I refuse to let him go hungry because my past has come back to crush me. I'm that first breath of freedom. Breathe in the thousand reasons, leaving a cell block of demons screaming freedom like you just left work for the weekend. Only the work week lasted for 5 years. Borrowed time will make you see clear as you watch your youth disappear. You learn the truth when you're in here. Only your true friends will be there when you breathe free air. I'm the rebirth of Pac, Poe, and Shakespeare. I'm the rose that grew from concrete, the thump-thump beneath the street of where Romeo and Juliet would meet. I'm the madness created from the telltale heartbeat. I'm Achilles at war, but my pen is my sword. Using the allure of everything I went through before as a metaphor that you don't have to struggle anymore. I'm that morning light. After making it through a night that might have taken your life when there was nothing but darkness in sight. But you find the strength to fight because the sun shines bright. Once you believe, everything will be all right. I'm the last words that a poet writes. I'm the skies telling the story of my past. Then remind me of what I'll see when I'm looking back. Similes didn't have the impact of half of that, so I literally mapped out the path from where I was at. I'm chaos finding serenity, the point beyond infinity, taking what's given to me so I can build from within my city. I even pray for my enemy, because once upon a time they were a friend to me. Regardless if they see it differently, I'm trying to make history. I'm a legend. Or so I've been told by my friends that made it to heaven. As a penman, I'm the extension of their resurrection, redemption. For anyone abusing prescription medicine whose progression led them to heroin, that's settling. I'm the voice of a generation, raising my voice to nation. Inspiration for every addict getting high in the basement, or kid trying to get clean as a detox patient, that they can say, I am one of the ones that made it. I am hope for those that lost, still carrying pieces of broken dreams in their pocket, who think happiness is found in material objects. I'm street knowledge. I'm passion, pleasure, and pain. I'm lightning, thunder, and rain. And what my mother made on the first day of May, I'm a heroin addict to change, but couldn't wash away the stains that covered my veins. I'm Matthew Gannon, and you will remember the name.
Matthew Gannon, thank you so much for being on the show today.
No problem at all. More than happy.